Wisconsin Eyes and Wisconsin Dells at the 2017 Republican State Convention, interviewing 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy. Sean, good to see you again.
It's good to be here. Thanks
we
for having me.
We could talk some heavy-duty politics. Here's my first question. You surprised a lot of people when you decided not to run for the U.S. Senate. Talk about your decision.
Yes, listen, I seriously considered it, and actually started to build an organization to run. And at one point, it was going well. And I thought, you know what, I don't really have a lot of opportunity to get out of a race that I really dive into in the summer. I have to make the decision now. So I spent time talking to my kids and my wife. We spent a week and a half thinking about it. And in the end, my kids are young. And I know this would be a two-year, very challenging race. It's a seven-day-a-week job. And so though I had a little regret stepping away from this race, I was feeling more regret taking too much time away from my kids. So it just wasn't, the timing wasn't right for me. Though I think the politics of this next election cycle are going to go well, and I think Tammy will have a tough time winning. But it's not going to be me that's going to be at the top of our ticket in that Senate race.
You understand why you were considered the number one potential candidate. You were had some momentum from speaking at the Republican National Convention. You'd been an unapologetic Trump supporter. So there was a lot of surprise that you decided not to.
Yeah, but again, I was keeping the door open. But, you know, the most important thing isn't, you know, politics and trying to go from the House to the Senate. I love my job right now. Listen, I love the place that I work out of Wausau, and, you know, I have a great district. And, you know, my kids take a priority. So when you balance things, if my kids are going to suffer, I just chose not to take the dive.
Are you afraid that there'll be a 5, 6, or 7 way primary that'll hurt a Republican's chance of winning?
That's a good question. I think we have 5, 6, 7 people considering the race right now. I think we're better if we can narrow that down. A Republican money spent on Republican is never the best strategy. So if we can, you know, rally around one person, who that is right now, I don't know. But that's always a better strategy if you can get through the process as a party and run one candidate. Because, again, you don't spend so much money running and beating up on each other. But I don't know how that's going to play out. And, again, I think we have to see who, you know, what candidate's going to rise to the top and who has the best mojo, if you will, in the party. And, you know, we'll see if that happens.
Anybody you're backing?
I'm not. I'm waiting to see kind of who all gets in and how they do.
Let's talk health care. The bill that the House passed, would it have the original CBO scoring, potentially, 24 million would lose health care over a period. There wasn't a CBO score on that bill that you passed. Do you think it also could result in 24 million potentially losing?
So first of all, you look, the CBO has never done a great job of analyzing health care. They got it wrong under Obamacare. I think they get it wrong here. But what we do give is people the freedom to choose not to buy insurance. I mean, Obamacare tries to force people into insurance. We give people the right to choose. We incentivize them to buy it, but we don't force them to buy it. And so this number comes from people who might choose not to buy health insurance, or the young invincibles who don't want to buy. That coupled with the fact that you can't look at Obamacare in a sterile environment. Obamacare is collapsing. If you look at the 94 counties of the 99 in Iowa that are going to lose their one last insurer in their exchange, who's going to cover these people in Iowa now? There's no answer to that. Have we calculated the number of people who lose that coverage in Iowa? And then in Virginia, all over the country, you have insurers who are bailing out of the exchanges that are hurting people. On top of that, people who get a subsidy in the exchange, they can afford it. And I would argue it works really well for them. But a vast number of people don't actually get a subsidy. And so if they're paying full price, the premiums have skyrocketed to the point where a lot of families can barely afford insurance under Obamacare. And if they can, the deductibles are so high, it renders the policy virtually worthless. And so for people to sit back and go, Obamacare is working for people, is absolutely false. This has been on the ballot. And when it's been on, Democrats have lost the House, they've lost the Senate, and they've lost the White House. Americans want a change in health care. They see this as a failure. And Democrats who come and say, well, fix Obamacare. The question is, how? Has Barack Obama said, this has been in place, you know, for the last 4 years of my presidency, this is how you fix this signature legislation of mine? or has Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, has any Democrat given us any pathway to fix Obamacare? There's nothing. There's zero. Because you can't fix this lemon of a law. What they'll say is, we want just single payer. But none of them have tried to come forward and fix Obamacare. And so Democrats will say, well, why don't you try to fix it? Well, if you can't even fix it, I can't fix it either. We're gonna work on a set of policies that are going to actually help bring prices down and give more choice and drive more competition in healthcare.
What do you think is the biggest unknown with the House-passed bill that the Senate will have to fix or address?
Well, listen, I don't know that it's an unknown. I think the Senate is going to start with our base tax. And the Senate's a different body with different people. And you're going to see them, I think, start to tinker with what we've done. And they're going to put a lot of thought into it. And what the end product out of the Senate looks like, I can't project that. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't think any senator can project that. But I do think they're going to rise to the occasion and pass a bill out of the Senate that we can then go to a conference on, where we bring the House and the Senate together and we fix the differences in the two bills and bring them back to each of our chambers and vote and get a bill that's going to work for
potential
people.
Timeline on that?
Again, I'm not in the Senate, okay. But I'm hopeful that in the next 2 months they can come out with a bill. You know, by the middle of the summer, I would be hoping they come out.
You represent a huge rural district. And that one study that I wonder was accurate, that people in rural districts are more likely to get their health care through Obamacare. Is that true in the 7th?
Well, what I can I don't know about that. What I can tell you is that my district has traditionally been 50-50. They voted for Romney Ryan by 2 to 3 points. This Obamacare was on the ballot, and it was discussed at almost all the rallies with Hillary Clinton and with Donald Trump, and they voted for Donald Trump in my district by a 20-point margin. That's a huge victory. It was the largest margin by any congressional district in our state. So I think that they saw for themselves that Obamacare wasn't working. I have families who come and say, I get a subsidy, this works well for me. I like it, to be honest. But I get a lot of other people who go, I can't afford this anymore. You got to save me. I can't afford my insurance. I used to be able to afford my health insurance, but my premiums have doubled or tripled, and I can't pay for them anymore. You got to fix this thing. And another problem that our people face is with the increasing cost of health care. Your employer, instead of having money to give you in a raise, he's taking your raise and putting it into your increased cost of your premiums. And so people aren't getting raises. And they understand the connection between those two as well. And they actually want a health care system that's going to work for them. And Obamacare hasn't done that.
President Trump has been a president unlike any other in the first 125 days. What do you like about him stylistically?
I think that we have become a nation of those who are politically correct. And President Trump is not politically correct. And I think everyone would agree on that. And he's doing things that he thinks is the best for the country to keep us safe and to grow jobs and grow opportunity. And though it may not sit well in political world or might not feel the best, you know, in the spaces of political correctness, he's doing it because he thinks in the end it's going to help people and he will be rewarded for that. And so he's unashamed in his advocacy for Americans, and I love that about him. Also, I think the press has not been fair with him. Usually the press will give a governor or a congressman or a president especially some room to breathe, some room to get some things done before they start to attack him. And I would argue that right after the election, it seems like the press has been on him about everything. And he has a very contentious relationship with them. And I don't think it's good for anybody that you have this contentious butting of heads between the president and the press. But I don't know, the press is going to stop. Their ratings are up. But President Trump's going to have to bow to them, or he's going to have to keep fighting back if he wants to be successful with his agenda. And in that space, I think President Trump has won in that a lot of Americans look at the media, and I don't think they think that they're telling them fake or untrue things. But I do think there's a perception that they only tell one part of the story that drives a certain narrative that fits, you know, the ideology of, you know, the editors and producers inside networks.
Stylistically, the president's style, is it wise to be the tweeter-in-chief?
You know, if you look at technology, it continues to change. and that Donald Trump can send out a tweet and it is covered on all news networks right when it comes out. It's been a pretty effective way for him to communicate with the American people. I don't know how reflective he is before he sends out a tweet, and that might serve him well to have some reflection about what he tweets out. But beyond that, what a powerful way to communicate with the American people through Twitter. And I think President Obama did a great job using technology. I think Donald Trump has taken it to a whole other level. And it's a way, if you feel like people aren't being fair with your message, it's a way for you to communicate directly with people around the buffers of the media, and he's done it well.
Would it concern you if the president did tape his conversation with former FBI Director Comey?
Listen, I don't have any facts, and I've heard that reported, and I saw the tweet. I guess it would depend on the circumstances under which it happened. Do I think law enforcement record people without their knowledge? Yeah, they do it all the time. I would hope that there was a better relationship at the time that they were meeting and they wouldn't be recording each other. But again, it's hard to pass judgment when you don't know all the facts. And I don't know all the facts, and so I'm not going to pass judgment on anyone.
Some of the pundits in Washington were using the term constitutional crisis in the wake of the dismissal of Mr. Comey. Do you think we're approaching or in a constitutional crisis?
Listen, what baffles me in that regard is you've had liberals that have come out and said, fire Comey, he's a disaster, get rid of him. And the media has been, Comey's a disaster, he had an impact on the election, we should get rid of him. And now, because Trump has gotten rid of him, now they're like, oh my God, a constitutional crisis. Well, what's changed? The only thing that's changed in the last several months since they were, you know, advocating his dismissal was that now President Trump has done it. And what I think it is no matter what this president does, there is going to be opposition. There is going to be a resist movement that comes out against him. A very good friend of mine, this might surprise you, but Maxine Waters is a friend. We served in a committee together.
Yeah.
But Maxine earlier was, in essence, saying, fire him. And now that he has been fired, now she's like, oh my God, a constitutional crisis. This is horrible that President Trump has fired him. You can't have it both ways. And there has to be some intellectual honesty in the media and with members of Congress. You can't 2 months ago say this guy is unfit to serve, and when he's fired, go, oh my goodness, you shouldn't have done it, and it's a constitutional crisis. They're using it for political gain, and I think it's sad.
Just two more questions.
Yeah.
Do you think the Americans will know about the Russian potential involvement in the campaign as a result of the investigations, FBI, House, and Senate?
Yeah.
Do you think the truth will come out?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, how much is sent to the American people and how much has to remain confidential? I can't tell you that. But yeah, we have a House, a Senate, and an FBI all investigating this issue.
No need for a special prosecutor.
No, I don't think so. But I do think we should get as much information as possible. But I will tell you this. Information did come out on the emails, right? Number one. But second of all, Hillary Clinton didn't come to Wisconsin. She didn't go to Michigan. She wasn't going to battleground states that she needed to be in to win. And again, the Russians and Comey, no one told her not to do that. It was bad politics and a bad message on her part that I think cost her the election. Not these other factors that the left is trying to grapple onto.
My final question deals with the state issue, but because your district represents so much of Wisconsin's forests, it's this, and you may not be aware of it, but right now Wisconsin levies a property tax to protect, maintain, and preserve and replace our forests. It raises $90 million a year. The governor's recommended eliminating that property tax. Is this an issue in the 7th district?
So it's one that I haven't heard come up yet, but I would say, you know, the forests are a big issue for us. And, you know, one of our concerns is that we're not, the National Forest Service is not managing them well. We're not able to harvest the allowable sustainable cut levels. And that drives revenue into our communities, not just by our loggers, but we feed our mills, and money from those sales goes to our schools. And so we have real concern about the way the forests are managed because it has a real impact on our economy.
Were the tariffs that the president imposed on Canadian softwoods good for the 7th district?
See, what I think was good about the president's action is when Canada is playing games with subsidizing their ultra-filtered milk, so we can't now sell our ultra-filtered milk and it has a huge impact on our Wisconsin farms. I think there has to be consequences for that. And I love to have a president who says, listen, if you start going after our products because you don't want free trade, listen, we'll go after your products. I don't think trade wars are good. But I'm happy that we have someone who's paying attention to what's happening in the Wisconsin economy. And my hope is that Canada will back off and say, you know what, we love NAFTA. We think free trade is good. Well, if you like free trade, abide by the principles of free trade and don't subsidize your milk. And by the way, you shouldn't subsidize your timber sales as well, so you can dump your wood into Wisconsin. And I think President Trump understands that and is going to address that with Canada. And I think in the end, that's good for the northern economy.
Congressman John Duffy at the Republican Convention.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Thank you.